when I got sick, when I had the cancer, I was scared because I didn't know what was going to happen to me. But I just knew that if I worked hard enough and I focused on my health enough, I would get better. But when it comes to immigration, I have absolutely no control over that. It's not up to me.
Hola amigos, welcome to IndocuTalks. This is Nancy Canales and I will be your host for the second episode of our second season. IndocuTalks is a podcast created by immigrant youth for immigrant youth. We are committed to discussing important immigration topics surrounding news, culture, education, and art. In this episode entitled Immigration Status and Mental Health, we will shine light onto the reality of how our immigration status contributes to our mental health. We will listen to three different stories from our friends Katia, Ceci, and Stephanie.
And now, a word from our partners.
Welcome to California State University San Bernardino's Undocumented Student Success Center. Our mission is to create a welcoming, dynamic, resource environment for our undocumented student population and to provide a safe place where allies and other persons with a common interest for underserved populations can congregate, exchange ideas, and provide support to one another and their students.
You can reach out to us and find more information at www.csusb.edu/undocumented-student-success-center and on social media at UndocuYodis.
Saludos, familia. This is Christian, host and producer of La Verdad Podcast, a show where urban Latinos sit back and chat about current events, culture, and tradition. Our podcast also features interviews with other Latinos who are motivating and uplifting our community. So make sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter as @LaVerdadLTD. Also, just so you know, our podcast is available on YouTube. Gracias y quien dijo miedo.
Welcome to the IndocuTalks podcast. You're listening to your host, Norma Ramirez, and this is the mental health segment. For this episode, we will be exploring the ways in which immigration status is intertwined into the tapestry of our lives. Since we may touch on topics that may bring up difficult feelings, we recommend that you check in with yourself throughout this episode. For example, is your heart rate beating faster? Are you getting angry, anxious? If you notice any of these feelings, it's okay to pause and then return when you feel better. You can also grab a friend or someone you trust to listen with you so that you can be supported and processed together. I will be using the areas identified in the article titled Immigration as a Social Determinant of Health by Castañeda and colleagues. If you're interested in reading it, you can search for it online. It's free. For now, we will focus on the areas identified in which immigration status affects the lives of individuals. To begin, we need to mention that migration has been historically defined in different ways. For example, some people are called refugees or displaced people because it was thought that their circumstances were out of their control or they were forced, while voluntary migration is seen as a choice with underlying privilege. Castañeda and her colleagues argue that these definitions need to be redefined because the idea of voluntary migration ignores the consequences of structural violence that force people to move from their home countries. Therefore, immigration is determined by social, economic, and political inequalities. This is normal to us, or we understand this, because as we all know, many of our families came to the United States looking for a better future. The phrase, in search of a better future, encompasses the social, economic, and political inequalities of our home countries. So when policymakers view our need for migration as a choice, they are less likely to incorporate and provide resources and access to health and social services. I think this points to an underlying mechanism in the current immigration system. If we're undocumented, we cannot work legally as well as have access to other resources. And with most legal statuses such as DACA, TPS, and even residency, there are still limits to what resources are available. Personally, as I have been learning about this, I imagine my immigration status as the string that connects my life. For example, when I enter into any kind of relationship, whether it's with an individual, group, or institution, trust is really important to me because I have seen how I can't trust the systems around me due to my legal status. Furthermore, the first time I went to the doctor was when I started graduate school because this was the first time I had health insurance. And it's hard for me to go to the doctor when I'm sick now because it reminds me of my status. At the same time, I have seen how it has given me strength to overcome all the obstacles that I have faced and will continue to face. So to help us go more in depth, we have three special guests who will share their stories with us.
I think immigration has impacted every facet of my life at this point. I've definitely seen it everywhere.
At the consulates, for example, we mostly work with undocumented people. And one of the things that happens with undocumented people is that the access to services is very complicated. For example, if they want to go to health services, they don't have insurance. If they want to open a bank account, they don't have a social security number, or they don't have a government ID that will be helpful, even if they come to us. It is very hard for them in many states to get a driver's license, which is also very complicated because then you can either choose to drive without a driver's license, which then compounds again, because then if you're caught, you will not only get a ticket, but you might even be deported, which is complicated. And there are even situations where it can get worse. For example, there are some counties here in Texas that, against human rights, against all the recommendations that have been made by international institutions, will not allow women to register their children if they don't show a passport or a visa. That a passport showing that they crossed legally. So that, of course, creates a huge amount of problems that just compound on each other and build on this vulnerability. Apart from the things with the IDs, which can be, they just complicate every little aspect of someone's lives, I've also found that one of the things that cripple our community the most is fear. When people are afraid, it is very hard for them to keep on with a normal life or to act in situations that are like in the limit. For example, in cases where there is domestic violence or in cases where there's abuse in the workplace, many times people, because of the fear, they don't feel like going to a police and reporting what's going on. And that's really a problem. In the best situation, they could approach the police. There are many things that can be gotten right for them approaching the police. But the fear is very, very crippling. And I also saw it in this story when I was in the Mexican consulate in California. The week after Trump was elected, I remember very clearly, we were receiving a lot of people that had many questions on their immigration status. They were afraid. They wanted any information they could get on how they could protect themselves from deportation, how they could protect themselves, their families, their assets. But the one story that really stuck to me was not a grown-up asking for help, but a little girl. She was 11 years old, and she came into my office. She was hugging a teddy bear, and she was crying. And she came into my office asking what it is that she could do to make sure that they would not deport her mom. And I can't stop thinking about this because I think it really shows how the things that happen in the abstract, in the big play of politics, really affect a person's life. And I don't think we could reasonably expect this girl to go then back to school and thrive at school the next month. It's going to be really hard for her. It's not that simple.
Norma posed a question to our guests, asking how immigration status impacts their lives. We just listened to two of the three featured guests discuss the impacts of immigration status and how they do not only affect one individual, but also a family, a friend, and a community. In this particular case, Ceci discusses the story of a little girl who is terrified that she will not see her mother again. Through these stories, we are able to see how immigration status shapes every facet of our lives. Stay tuned throughout the episode to listen to the powerful stories from Katia, Ceci, and Stephanie. That was Reviva with Take Me Away. We will continue on to the DocuNews segment with Cindy y Alejandro.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to your segment of DocuNews. This is your co-host, Cindy Nava, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois. It's great to be back. Thank you all for the love and support, and shout outs to the wonderful team at DocuTalks who did a marvelous, unexpected shout out to me during the last segment where I was not part of. So thank you all. It's a blessing to be part of the team, and I'm so grateful to be back. Along with me is my fabulous co-host, Mr. Alejandro Mendez, coming to you from New Mexico.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us for episode 2. What a joy to be back, and what a joy to have my wonderful co-host back with me, Miss Cindy Nava, as she said, joining us from Chicago now. So for today's topic, we wanted to discuss a little bit about the census. Miss Nava, I know you had a little bit more information on the upcoming census. Do you want to share something with us?
Absolutely. For our listeners, there's a big shift coming around with the census. So for the first time since 1950, the U.S. Census Bureau is planning to ask everyone living in the United States whether they are citizens when it conducts its next decennial census in 2020. So what does that mean? That essentially means that, anticipating that some immigrants might avoid answering the question, the Trump administration wants to try to use other government records to fill in missing responses. So essentially, Alejandro, I know you've heard about this, you know, this citizenship question. So asking people whether they are citizens of the country. And the concern, of course, is who this is going to affect, what communities this is going to be detrimental to. And, you know, what we're hearing from the Census Bureau, it's that they're trying to just get a better scope and detail for in order to be able to enforce the Voting Rights Act. And these are words from the Census Bureau's director. The new question's inclusion has been challenged in court that it could cause many immigrants to skip the 2020 census out of fear that their information could be used against them, even though it is illegal to share a person's census responses with law enforcement or immigration agencies. Have you heard about this, Alejandro? What's your take on this?
As you mentioned, I've heard quite a bit about the census in the past. I know that this is not the first time that this is considered. And I just want to take a second to let our listeners know how important, in terms of voting rights, the census is. So the census is how we determine how many representatives to allocate to states and to different districts. This is how we get counted. The more people there are in a certain state or in a certain district, the more representatives that we can create. So the number of people being counted directly correlates to our representation at a state and at a federal level. So this is super, super important that we are counted. However, there is also a very legitimate fear. I mean, the Trump administration has been going after immigrants left and right. It's been going after certain demographics wherever it can. So of course, people are going to be fearful of putting on an official document that they are not citizens or that they're undocumented. I mean, this is a pretty real fear. What are your takes, Ms. Nava, in terms of the feasibility of the Trump administration being to go after immigrants if they answer that they are in fact not citizens or that they're undocumented?
And as we've heard, Ale, this is a legitimate fear. I obviously am not an attorney, and I would not speak or pretend to identify the likability that they could take such actions to find community members and track them the way that they've been tracked. But at this point, there's no certainty. So what we do know, though, is there's a lawsuit by California Attorney General Javier Becerra, and it contends that if the census undercounted immigrants, it would be an incomplete population count that violates its constitutional purpose, which is to divide up seats, like you said, in the U.S. House of Representatives based on the total U.S. population. Also, the California lawsuit says that the Trump administration failed to follow government procedures in adding questions to the decennial census form. What he's saying also is just basically that if immigrants shun the census, it could reduce the number of congressional seats and the amount of federal funding in states with large numbers of foreign-born residents, such as California and many others. And social scientists, Alejandro, are also saying that if immigrants avoid the national headcount, the census results will be completely flawed, therefore also hurting health and social science research. In the meantime, New York State is also leading a group of 18 states, 10 cities, 4 counties, and the U.S. Conference of Mayors in a lawsuit against the Census Bureau and Commerce Department to try to remove the citizenship question as well. Some of these states include Illinois, New Mexico, Virginia, Vermont, Rhode Island. There's so many states coming together, Alejandro. So I think it makes a point. It makes a valid point that the fact that this citizenship question is being pushed into the census you know, it puts everything into question in terms of validity. And in terms of fear, of course, there's a fear for those of us that have been that can remember, you know, the last census. It's already intimidating as is. And coming from an immigrant family, you are already questioning every single thing that comes to your door. You're already questioning the idea of giving information away.
When we grow up in undocumented households, what's the first thing they tell us? Don't say you're undocumented. Avoid saying you're an immigrant. Avoid the citizenship question. And so if this question is finally printed on the 2020 census, it is going to be kind of an uphill battle with our community. It's already kind of hard enough to get our community to fill out the census. And then if there's that added factor, I feel like we're definitely going to have to be doing a lot of campaigning and a lot of disseminating of information, as well as arming ourselves with information to make sure that our community is not then targeted from that. And now a word from one of our community partners.
DACA Scholars is the number one app used by Latino students across the country. Inside of DACA Scholars, you will find over 140 scholarships for both undocumented and DACA students, all the way from high school to a PhD level. DACA Scholars is absolutely free and available for all iPhones, Androids, and Windows Phone.
I wish I could go to sleep and wake up in a different world, a world that doesn't incarcerate the innocent, a place that takes care of its own, a place without homeless veterans and abused children. When I was 5, my mother told me we lived in a foreign world. I was confused. She said it was for the best. My parents sacrificed the most precious thing they had to give me a better life. They sacrificed the closeness with those they love. I have yet to see freedom. I have lived and seen many things. I have seen my mother cry for her parents because she wasn't able to say her last goodbye. I've seen my father cry as he called my grandfather from a strange land and heard his last breath. I've seen the guilt in my father's eyes when the feelings of remorse are too much and my grandmother is without a son. I've seen the police around my home, a criminal for following my mother incarcerated as a child for being too innocent. I've seen many things, but I've yet to see freedom. I've yet to see justice. I know it will never come. I am not illegal, mojada, quemada, fence hopper, taker of jobs. I am not your fetishized bed warmer. I am traveler, dreamer, fighter. I am the saint on your mantle, the savior, prayers on your Sunday mass. I am the cause for your late brunch, the food on your table brought by brown, scarred hands that work for a few cents. I was 5 when my mom said this was all right and I had to be tough. I was 5 when immigration went to my house and showed me I was not one of you. I was 15 when my status mattered. No jobs for this poor mojada, an illegal, an invader of your land. Quiet brown girls sound better on the news. Thick accents will get you nowhere. Pray for justice, you say. The ones you see here suffer and you ignore them. The land of the free, a poisoned apple of temptation. No prosperity or dollar bills, only suffering and pain pills. I have yet to see freedom. Land of the free, an illusion of storytellers. The only freedom left is that of my writing. I have yet to see the freedom you speak of in your anthem. Your land of the free is not for me. A glass cage surrounded by barbed wire and electric fences. I've yet to see freedom. I am forced to go back into darkness. I am no longer safe. Your land of the free is not for me. I am not suited for this. But where can I go if my home is neither here nor there? I have yet to see the freedom. I wish I could go to sleep and wake up in a different world, a world that doesn't incarcerate the innocent, a place that takes care of its own.
We just listened to I Have Yet to See Freedom by Paola. Paola is the newest member of our wonderful podcast, and we will be hearing more from her a little later in the show. For now, we will continue with the second part of our UndocuNews segment.
Topic of the denaturalization task force. This is actually kind of an unprecedented task force that's being set up by the Trump administration to review the citizenship of existing naturalized citizens and see if they committed fraud on their application in order to be able to strip them then of their citizenship. Now, this is pretty crazy. I'm not saying that fraud never happens. The rate of fraud, and this is by admission of the own Department of Homeland Security, the rate of fraud is extremely low. So to have a task force created to specifically hunt down immigrants who are suspected of fraud is just crazy. I mean, the president likes to use this term of witch hunt when referring to the Russia probes, but if anything is a witch hunt, I mean, I think this denaturalization task force is definitely one of them. They're also targeting natural-born citizens. What's happening right now along the Texas-Mexico border is that there are a lot of parteras, so a lot of home midwives that help women give birth. And of course, you know, this doesn't happen in a hospital setting. This happens in a home setting. And so they provide a certificate and these kids get registered than at the hospital. But what's happening is that the administration is also calling into question the citizenship of these babies that were born in their homes with the help of a midwife along the Texas-Mexico border. And so the administration is actually denying U.S. citizens the right to a passport. And so this has pretty big implications because people along the border are now afraid of commuting. They're afraid of visiting family members. They're afraid of leaving the country. They're afraid that they might not be able to vote in the upcoming elections because their citizenship is being called into question.
Thank you for listening to your DocuNews segment with Cindy Nava and Alejandro Mendiaz. It's a pleasure to be back with you all.
It's a pleasure to have you back, Cindy. Like she said, thank you for listening in. As you may have seen on our social media, we are trying to keep the community updated with breaking news, with different pieces of information. So please make sure that you're following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at UndocuTalks.
That was Dots and Lines by Lupe Fiasco. We will continue with our mental health segment in which we will hear the responses to the question posed by Norma of how does immigration status impact our lives? To start, we will hear from Katia, who is a documented individual living in Las Vegas, Nevada. She is finishing her undergraduate degree in social work. Secondly, we will hear from Ceci, an immigrant working at the Mexican consulate in Dallas, Texas. She is supporting our immigrant community with resources and other needs. I'd like to mention that Ceci's story is her point of view and does not reflect the consulate or government's point of view.
When it comes to health, I think my mental health is just all over the place when it comes to what's going on right now. I feel like I'm a pretty strong person, but when it comes to this, I have no control over what's going on with my immigration status. So it's going to be really nerve-wracking for me, and I have thankfully gone to therapy and opened up to that to be able to treat myself, get treatment. I actually also, a couple years back, had really low-risk thyroid cancer, which low-risk, you know, I know the word cancer is scary. It was still cancer, though, so I did have to have a surgery to get that piece of cancer removed. But back in then, I didn't have a full-time job, so I didn't have health insurance, and I couldn't apply anything federal, so raising money to be able to have that surgery was very difficult. I found out a lot about the American healthcare systems and how, you know, they don't really work with the people sometimes. I was just really upset that, you know, I had literal cancer and doctors were telling me that they would not be able to perform the surgery unless I paid half of the money, which was, I think it was $15,000 that they wanted me to pay up front, and I don't think anyone has $15,000 laying around. So I was definitely in a lot of debt after that. When it comes to education, I am still in school. I've been in school, in college for, I've been 6 years. I started college when I was 16, and I'm still finishing up. I'm still a senior. I'll finish up hopefully in 2 years or so. It's hard being on DACA or undocumented and going to school. I mean, it's hard to go to school either ways with all these loans and how expensive college is. But when you're undocumented or DACA, you don't get to get these loans. You don't get any federal aid. So everything has to be paid up front. And that's what I've been doing this whole time. I've been working all these jobs to be able to pay for school, and It's been a lot, but I've been able to do it, thankfully. But I know that it slows down a lot of people in the progress of getting to the point of graduating. Well, I think due to both my status and, you know, my family background, I've had to work really hard no matter what was happening. I remember my friends, you know, being so angry and confused because I was working up until the day of my surgery and I didn't stop going to school. I did consider it. I thought maybe I should take a semester off to focus on my health. But yeah, I was just like, no, but I think I can do it. And I did talk to my professors. I worked it out with the job I had at the time to not come in for a while until I healed. Because I was, you know, kind of out of it for after the surgery. I still suffer the symptoms and I will suffer it for the rest of my life because half of my thyroid was removed in the surgery and some of my lymph nodes as well. So I have to take medication for the rest of my life and get constant checkups for the rest of my life. I'm getting through it. I did that and I'm still doing it. Made me a better person, I think, because I went through this. I am able to not necessarily give advice to other people, but kind of just tell my story to other people and tell them what I did in my situation. I've met other people that have been sick and are undocumented, and they've come to me because they heard, you know, that I was sick, and they asked me, you know, what I did, and I tell them what I did. And that's helped them a lot. And or sometimes I'll just listening to my friends. I have some friends that are going through all of this, and I've been the point, whatever point they're at, and just being able to tell them, I remember when I did that and it sucks, but you'll get through it. Healing, you know, a big part of it has been my friends and my families. I help people by telling them that I've been through that and it sucks. Sometimes I just need to call my friends and tell them that my life sucks right now and this is what's going on, and I list off everything that's the bad, and I just want someone to listen to me and tell me, yeah, that sucks. But aside from that, I did go to therapy. I did do that. And as much as there's a huge stigma within the Latino community and well, just probably every community against mental health professionals, it did help me. I'm always going to be a huge advocate for it because I do feel that I did get better after that. I believe that as long as I had something to work for or knew what to do in life to fix whatever problem was coming my way, I would be fine, right? When I got sick, when I had the cancer, I mean, I was scared because I didn't know what was going to happen to me. But to do, I just knew that if I worked hard enough and I focused on my health enough, I would get better. But when it comes to immigration, I have absolutely no control over that. It's not up to me. And that always just terrified me so much, not being in control of, you know, what's happening to me. So being able to talk to a professional about what do I do when I have these panic attacks about my future and what's going to happen to me and my family and this and that, it really helped getting advice from a professional and going through that, yeah. But also, you know, family and friends, definitely. When I was sick, I had a lot of fundraisers. I had a kermes throughout the entire day. It was from like 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. in a park. And I remember, you know, like 12 families that were close to me and my family came and brought a dish. And throughout the day, there were people coming in and out. Everyone helped spread the word about it. I still get, you know, this actually happened, I think, yesterday or the day before the anniversary. I saw it on Facebook. I never expected so many people to come. There were hundreds of people that showed up and bought food, donated money. And at the end of the day, we raised over $4,000 in just one day for my surgery, which is a ridiculous amount of money. And I never, you know, really expected my community to come together just to help someone they don't know. A lot of people, admittedly, yes, I knew them, but most of these people, they didn't know me. They never heard of me. And then they just saw, you know, an ad, we're going to be selling pozole and pupusas. And the community really came through and helped me out. That was really great.
I have found that our community is very, very resilient. It's always surprising for me. And it has also built very strong bonds. I think, for example, just this month, we had one of the biggest immigration raids that has happened in the U.S. in a decade. In the north of Texas, it was the county of Sumner. There was an immigration operation, and they detained around 160 undocumented immigrants. And in the week after this happened, we went to the place to try and give resources to a community. It was a consulate, but there were also plenty of organizations, plenty of lawyers that were there to help. And it was amazing at some point when I just turned around and I noticed that there were actually more people helping than people needing help. And I thought that was very telling of how our community has built very strong bonds, how we really metemos el hombro, as we say in Spanish, and we try to really help and connect when help is needed.
We just finished listening to Fists of Fury by Kamasi Washington. Lastly, we were here from Stephanie, friend and colleague of Norma, currently completing a PhD and doing research on internally displaced migrants in Colombia.
My research in Colombia deals with women who are internally displaced and who have been sexually violated due to their situation of internal displacement. But internal displacement is different from the immigration that we know well, like what maybe refugees would consider their migration status to be. So internal displacement is when a person or a group of people are moved within international borders, so they don't leave their country. However, the move can still be traumatic because they were either forced to move by either a group of people, by whoever it was that moved them, whether it be military, government officials, or it could be even a natural disaster. The move can be from a rural area to an urban area, from one coast to another. So still very drastic changes, but it's just not happening from one country to a different country. It stays the same. However, there are still so many changes that happen even within, especially within Colombia, mm-hmm. just the kinds of people that live in different areas, the languages that are spoken, the way people are treated. Rural versus urban life is very different. So of course, if you move one group of people who have lived their entire lives in the rural villages, like up in the mountains in Colombia, and force them into Medellin or force them to any other large urban mm-hmm. city, there's going to be a change. And what I deal with is women who have been sexually violated in some way or another due to the process of having to be displaced, and women are more at risk of being victims of sexual violence because they're women.
Right, I imagine then within the move, your social location, you have your mm-hmm. your friends, your family, your network, and then mm-hmm. you end up being forced to move. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they become more vulnerable in these other places, and
yes,
their at risk just increases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I think about too is like what we just talked about, you know, how do all of these things connect with immigration status? This is also seen with people who are internally displaced. I mean, there is still racism in Colombia. There are people who are Afro-Indigenous in Colombia, and those people who may be mixed with European ancestry. And so skin color is already different. People who, women especially, who are Afro-Indigenous are the ones who get treated less than. And so that already determines so much of like how they're going to be accepted, how they will be welcomed, whether or not they'll be even welcomed into the city that they're going into. Health services, I mean, gender, again, women will have a harder time because most of the time they're the ones with the kids. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are having to feed their kids. And so their job of taking care of their family is going to look a lot different versus a man.
Katia and Ceci have discovered the importance that our communities have in uplifting each other up. There is hope in our communities. Together we can listen and share our stories. We have nothing to lose. I urge our audience to take Katia and Ceci's advice into account, because as we have learned, our mental health matters. So reach out, talk to others, learn to heal, and continue to grow.
I would like to say that there is hope, that our community is very resilient, it is very strong, and that there is always a way ahead, even though every now and then it just looks like there's none.
I would definitely tell people to reach out for help. It's really scary to do so. I used to think that I could do everything myself, but that's not how life works or how it should work. There are people that are nice, that do care, that want to listen. There is help out there for whatever way you're feeling, and whatever you're feeling, it is valid. I remember when I was younger, I definitely was not the type to ask people to just listen to me because I was so upset. But nowadays, not very hesitant to do that. I do reach out for my friends, for my family, for mental health professionals, and my community. There's always resources. If you can't find them within, you know, your city, then there's always someone able to help outside of that. You can literally just go online and there's probably somewhere that offers some kind of help for what you're going through. Definitely reach out for help is what I would tell everyone going through something similar.
As you can see, immigration status does not exist in a vacuum or in well-defined compartments that do not interact with each other. Instead, it has a compounding effect in all areas of our lived experience. This is important for us to know because we tend to get messages denying our experience and what we feel and think as a result of it. When we may feel anxious or have a panic attack or experience a depressive episode, we may end up being our worst critics. However, the research shows that these are normal responses to our circumstances. Any person in our circumstances would react similarly. At the same time, this knowledge and understanding can bring new energy to the strength and resilience that we have built to continue meeting our goals and aspirations relationally, academically, and in other areas of our lives. We are thankful to Cecilia, Katia, and Stephanie for sharing their stories and knowledge with us. Share your story with us and resources you have found helpful at UndocuTalks on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or through email at UndocuTalks@gmail.com. Thank you.
Working hard, breaking barriers, I found myself at the edge of my goals. I have completed my studies, walked into my last final, and it hit me. I am Mexican, sat at the back of my classroom, feelings of exclusion from my peers. They look back. Perhaps it's me, perhaps it's the oppression, perhaps the years of solitude from online classes, but I have just come from my education. Having to prove myself worthy of being here, I lose my accent, trying to speak slower. I try to blend in so not to feel the judgment. Little do they know. No, I just came for the education. Years of explanation. My color comes from the South. My eyes, my mother's gift. My drive, my father's present. I just came for the education. Loneliness in a room full of people. I am glad it's finally over. Presentation claps, acknowledgments from my peers. I still didn't do enough. Still don't blend in, but I just came for the education.
We have the pleasure of welcoming a new collective member to the UndocuTalks team. She will be joining our culture and creative segment where she will be contributing poetry. You just listened to some of her great work. We welcome Paola Monares Ponce.
Hi.
So tell us what inspires your poetry.
So initially, it was a Chicano and Chicana studies course that I did with Jessica Helen Lopez here at UNM. But throughout the course, it was, you know, based on my life experiences. It was based on my own immigration experiences and my own, you know, past love experiences and things like those. But mostly the poems that inspired these two were the situations now with the kids being detained away from their parents. I had a similar experience when I was 5 and I was taken, and it's tough, and it just brought back a lot of memories, and it's a form of therapy to just go in there and write and be able to express yourself, maybe not say it, you know, to like random people, but it's nice to just get that out and write it and make it something that's helpful for others.
We've covered, you know, the whole family separation and family detention in our podcast. And so it's always good to put, you know, that personal story. So thanks for sharing that story with us. And as you mentioned, poetry could be a form of healing. And we have a mental health segment with Norma Ramirez that does a great job at covering some of the important, impactful issues with our community in regards to mental health. But you also are in the health field, and so you continue to give back to our undocumented communities. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those contributions that maybe you work on?
I recently was a volunteer at Casa de Salud here in the South Valley. I'm a nurse assistant, so I worked with them not only as a nurse assistant but also as an interpreter. And then the job I have now, I work as an interpreter sometimes with crisis assessments with families. And sometimes the families are Spanish speaking while the child is English speaking. So while they do a crisis evaluation, just to make sure that the child is safe, I have to interpret for the family, which is very important, I think, because it's scary to go into an evaluation where your child might be at risk for hurting themselves.
Thanks for joining our collective. I know you're going to be adding so much talent and so much insight into the work that we're currently already doing. And so Paola will be joining Rosy that is in Texas, who's also a poet. She will also be joining Julio, who's also a poet, in California. So now we have poets across three different states. And if you're interested in also contributing to our creative poetry segment, we always welcome contributors. And like Paola, you know, you're welcome to join our collective. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone, for joining us for the episode 2 entitled Immigration Status and Mental Health of Season 2. I hope that all of you listening found some comfort from hearing the stories from three strong women, the information from our Indocunews cast, the music, and the beautifully interpreted poetry pieces. We hope that you have gained some knowledge from Norma in our mental health segment and encourage you to use Indocutalks as a resource. We are happy to share this journey with you. I've been your host, Nancy Canales. Rafael Martinez helped with the production of this episode. Froilán Orozco was our engineer. We were joined by Norma Ramirez, host for our mental health segment, and Alejandro Mendiaz Rivera and Cindy Nava, hosts of our InDocuNews segment. The rest of our InDocuTalks collective members include Frank Berlanga Medina, Rosy Evelyn Lima de Padilla, and Julio Molina. You can always find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at InDocuTalks. Shout out to our graphic designer, Jerry Mateo.
Jerry Mateo Designs. My job is to tell stories and communicate values through design. If you are interested in my work, follow me on Instagram at Jerry Mateo Design.
Please stay tuned for our next episode, which, as always, airs on the last Monday of every month. We would like to thank 89.9 KUNM, a radio station located at the University of New Mexico, for allowing us to use the recording studios for this episode.
We would like to give a special thanks to the Department of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of New Mexico.
We are Chicano Chicana Studies at the University of New Mexico. If you're interested in receiving a BA online or a graduate certificate in Chicano Chicana Studies, please visit our website at chicanos.unm.edu.